5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
They say you never forget your first, which means my work is already cut out for me here on the debut edition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Great to have you here. I'm Jason Barrett. Today on this episode, ESPN LA 710 Operations Manager Dan Zampillo is going to drop by. We'll have a conversation about the state of sports radio today, go through some of his experiences throughout his career, as well as touch on one of the biggest stories in radio, the Entercom-CBS merger, which just took place last week. Since this is the first edition, I won't be doing this on future episodes since I'm always telling talent, get to the point and don't waste time. But because you don't know what to expect, I may as well roll it out for you. The way it's going to work, each week I'll have a different conversation with somebody from the sports media industry. It won't just be sports radio, that is the primary focus, but if somebody tickles my fancy in television or from a leadership position and I think there's something of value for people listening to gain from, then I'm always going to be open to those conversations. You'll find as we go along and we get to know one another better that I'm never going to be short on opinion, especially when it comes to this format. I could talk about it till I'm blue in the face. But the real reason I started it was to connect with people in the industry who I like, respect, and feel I can gain some knowledge from and present their stories and their information to you, because that's the only way you get better in our business. Everybody learns from someone. I don't care if it was early on in your career and you were listening to a station and you liked the way a host presented opinions or took phone calls or interviewed people. The bottom line is we all learn from one another and you make a lot of mistakes along the way while doing so. So the best way to grow is to listen to people who can give you advice that will ultimately help you in your career. And that's what I'm attempting to do. But rather than making small talk and taking up your valuable time, why don't we just dive into what has certainly been the biggest story in radio over the past week?
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Action!
The big story I want to talk about this week involves the Entercom-CBS merger. If you didn't hear about this story, I encourage you, get on Google, type in Entercom-CBS merger, and do your research because it's a pretty big radio deal. Ultimately, here's what's happened. The two companies have teamed up in a tax-free merger with Entercom assuming control of CBS Radio. That'll give them, that will place the company in control of more than 240 stations, including 23 of the top 25 markets. They'll also have the rights to more than 45 pro sports teams on their radio stations, which is incredible. Now understand this, Entercom doesn't assume control tomorrow. They still have to go through due process. They're going to have to divest some stations. And what that means is in certain markets, the FCC doesn't allow you to own more than a set number of stations and they'll be over the maximum. So they're going to have to work out a few deals with a couple of other companies. And when I'm asked about this, and it's, believe me, I get emails, tweets, texts on this constantly. And people do so because they know that I've worked for Entercom in the past and that I've had a good relationship. And so I'm not just saying this because it's company speak or because somebody asked me to. I'm saying it because I really believe this. I think this is a great deal for the radio business. Here's why. Everyone knew that CBS wanted to vacate the radio landscape. All this talk of an IPO, that was great and all. But the reality was, Les Moonves was on the record saying he didn't believe in radio. He wanted to move away from it. Well, if that's the viewpoint, you don't want to be working for a group that essentially feels they're stuck with you. You want to work for a company that is bullish on the business, that believes in the potential and the future of where this industry is headed. I'm not telling you everything Entercom does is perfect. Of course it's not. No company is. But I know this firsthand. They are committed to the radio business, especially the sports radio business. CBS had a storied run, an incredible run. They have built the premier franchises in sports radio across this country. What they've done should be applauded. We all hoped that they would have stayed in it and that they remained optimistic, but as times and circumstances change, people's business priorities change. So if they're not excited about the industry, you know, some people talk about consolidation and the scare of, you know, losing jobs. And look, what's to say that tomorrow you can't lose your job? You could go into work tomorrow, and if budgets are low or if ratings are low, the door could be shown to you. You know that when you sign up to work in this business, every single day, you better be performing or you could be let go. Will there be people who lose opportunities because of consolidation? Of course. But those who stick around, and trust me, there will be a lot more sticking around than exiting, are going to find themselves in a great situation. Because all you want as a programmer, a talent, a market manager, or a salesperson, or a support staff member, is to have a chance and to have a company that's in your corner and believes in what you're doing. I've worked for some operators that I could tell you firsthand didn't care about the industry. I'll never say that about David Field, Wheezy Kramer, or Pat Paxton. They absolutely do. Doesn't mean they're going to get all of this right. Doesn't mean they won't change a few things and probably ruffle a few feathers, because that's just par for the course. But if you're a CBS radio employee and you're wondering whether or not you're in good hands with Entercom, all I can tell you is I believe you are. The challenge now for David Field, Pat Paxton, and Wheezy Kramer is to write the next chapter and next part of the story for Entercom. This is a big, big move for the company. They're acquiring over another 100 radio stations, becoming the second largest company in the industry. That's exciting, yet it can also be scary. Do I think they'll answer the challenge and perform well? Absolutely. Maybe they won't operate the same way that CBS did in every situation, and people are creatures of comfort and hate to see anything be done differently. But when you step back and look at the way Entercom runs operations, and especially the way they approach the sports radio format, I think anyone who's working in our industry, who's in one of those situations, will find themselves appreciating where they are, because I've seen it firsthand. When it comes to sports, Entercom knows what they're doing. That's the top story making news in radio. I'm Jason Barrett. This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. It's now time to shift gears and switch our attention to our conversation of the week. And this week I catch up with ESPN LA 710 operations manager Dan Zampillo. Now, if you're not familiar with Dan, he's had a lot of experience in this format. He's programmed the ticket in Detroit, started his career at the Score in Chicago. He's programmed for SiriusXM in New York, ran ESPN 980 in Washington, D.C., and as I mentioned, he's now in L.A., where he's overseeing programming for 710. Since arriving in L.A., the station has put a new local morning show on, which has George Sedano, Keyshawn Johnson, and LZ Granderson. He arrived in town just as Max Kellerman was leaving for First Take. That's not an easy task, for sure, but to his credit, moved Kelvin Washington into afternoons with Marcellus Wiley, where the two continue to do very well in the local numbers. And then on top of that, he's working with one of the most established local brands in the nation today, and that's Mason and Ireland, who topped our top 20 list last week in the BSM top midday shows. I could sit here and talk about Dan Zampillo's background all day long, but I had the opportunity to catch up with him for this week's conversation, and here it is for you now.
And now, our feature presentation.
Last week, we're having dinner. Your midday show becomes the number one show in the nation, according to 53 executives. But you were in Houston, so since returning to the office, what changes have taken place? Do we have a bigger office for Mason in Ireland? Red carpet treatment, personal masseuse? What's changed?
We do that stuff all the time for Mason in Ireland, so, you know, nothing changes. We, we always roll out the red carpet for them. Nothing has changed. It was great. It was great to see them get that recognition for sure. I mean, they've had so much success for many, many years, and they're just such an institution here, and it was nice. They definitely deserve it. They work hard, and they're entertaining. It's fun to kind of sit in your office from noon to 3 and listen to them and have the entertainment value be so high and people react to it in such a positive way.
Now, another development took place last week while we were both in Houston. Companies that you're familiar with, CBS, Entercom, they merged, completely changes the entire layout of the entire business, not just sports format. Just your general reaction when you heard the news.
Listen, I was surprised. You know, consolidation's always, you know, a scary word for many people in the industry because you know that's going to mean that there's some redundancies, so some people are going to lose their jobs and that sort of thing. So from that standpoint, it's always, you know, a little scary. I will say this. I mean, I think both of those companies are very well run, and, you know, they've had a lot of success with a lot of different formats, and especially the sports format. You know, obviously, Entercom, a station like EEI, which is, you know, just a huge, huge name in this industry, and then, you know, CBS with the Fan and the Score and some of those, some of their properties, IP. So, you know, from a sports radio standpoint especially, I think that you've got companies that have really done well in the format, so I think that's a good sign. It'll just be interesting to see kind of how they balance out all the and they're going to have to sell some stations. Obviously, in L.A., they're one over the limit here, so that's going to change some things. So there'll be a little bit of shakeup here, and that's the only part that makes you a little nervous because I have such great respect for, you know, the people in this business. It's a tough, tough business, and you know, there's going to be some that are negatively impacted by it. So I hope that that's as minimal as possible.
I'm sure you hear it just like I do. The second a sale breaks, everyone thinks they're on the unemployment line the next day. I have to remind them, hey, this takes a while before the process plays out. And by the way, more times than not, there's a reason why a company spends close to $2 billion to acquire you. It's because they see value. And talent on the air aren't necessarily going to vanish tomorrow. Will there be some consolidation behind closed doors and management structures if you're, you know, taking two clusters and making one? Of course. But the bottom line is, and I can speak firsthand from working for Entercom, they do believe in sports. That's a huge thing for anyone in our format, that if you love sports and you love to do this format, they're big believers in it. We could talk industry shop all day, but you've got such an interesting story because you came from Chicago, you've been in Detroit, you've been in D.C., New York with Sirius, and now L.A. So let's go back to where it all started. Early on, Dan Zampillo's getting his start in radio. Where are you and what are you doing?
Well, it started with getting an internship at the Score in Chicago. I mean, I was a listener in college, and it's so funny. I applied for an internship to two radio stations at the time, the Score and WMAQ, which it was 670, which is now the Score. That was an all-news station, and I got a call back from both to come in and interview. So I interviewed for both internships. I got offered both, fortunately enough. And, you know, I chose to go with the Score. Now, I had a connection there, and I didn't think to use it. I would now. Maybe I was a little young and naive at the time. But, you know, Terry Bors, who just recently retired from the Score, he lived in my subdivision. I knew his son. I wasn't super close with them, but we knew of each other. So that definitely helped when my name popped up. But then I got an internship, and I interned for the afternoon show and did a lot of interesting, fun things and a lot of stuff that interns do, like, you know, get coffee and tacos for lunch and what have you. And that's kind of where it started. And I was fortunate enough from there I got hired as a part-time producer after my internship came up. So I was still in college and I was working part-time.
How long were you there before you realized you wanted to pursue programming?
After about 3 or 4 years, I kind of had an idea that this is something would want to do. I did some on-air work at the Score as well. I did some weekend and some fill-in stuff, but I really enjoyed it. But I kind of felt like that path is such a difficult path to foster, and I did not see a lot of younger guys interested in programming. You know, as I talked to more people in the business, I'm like, we need some young guys. So, but 3 or 4 years into it, I'm like, that's something I think I'd like to do. And so, you know, it still took a while to kind of get into a position to maybe be able to do it, but it was definitely on my mind.
Eventually, to program, that means you got to leave, and you've been willing to do that. I was willing to do the same, and there's a lot you sacrifice to do that, but when you get that opportunity, it's some of the best stuff you'll do in your career. You had one of the great experiences in Detroit with the Ticket. You were there. You know, they were an early adapter to FM. You enjoyed a lot of success. You know, when you look at that situation and what you gained from, you know, being a young programmer in that market, competitive market, pretty intense market, when you look back on that time in Detroit, what would you say are the positives and the negatives that you gained from that experience?
Well, I think the positives were just having the ability to kind of work with such interesting and unique talent was huge for me. Like, it was such a positive, because even when there were difficulties in that, I really started to have a clear understanding of just how much being a programmer is, you know, being a therapist, the psychologist, more than anything else, and just talking people through different scenarios. And sometimes those are heated discussions. Sometimes they're great discussions, but that was really a positive for me. And I didn't necessarily handle all of those really well, but I was glad to kind of be in the mix, and I took every opportunity as a learning experience in that. Even when I know that I may have not handled it perfectly, I was always thinking about, okay, what could I have done different? How could I have had this discussion differently? On the negative side, it was such a roller coaster there. There was a point in time where they were considering doing away with the sports format, period. When
wow.
I was there early on.
Can you imagine what this business would look like had they done that?
I know. I mean, and they were close. They were really close to that. And, you know, I had to go through, I mean, the worst experiences are always when you've got to let a lot of people go for budgetary reasons. You know, I had to do that. And then, of course, we built it back up and made the transition to FM. So it all worked out well. But those were really difficult experiences, very emotional experiences for me. You know, you have to learn to do them, but they still stick with me today. I think about some of the people that either had to let go, and, you know, most of them are on to really great things. But, you know, it does stick with you. I mean, I don't know if that's the case with everybody, but I still think about those times and just how difficult they were, and how, you know, going home at night was just not, you know, none of it was fun.
It's interesting you pointed out, because I went through it myself in St. Louis when I first got to the market. I was running KFNS 590 The Fan. And I don't know how old you were at the time, but I was 32 when I took over at KFNS. And nobody prepares you for telling someone that their career is coming to a close. Nobody prepares you for walking into a room telling you got to let 5 or 6 people go 2 weeks before Christmas. It's difficult. And anyone who's been a programmer understands that. But anyone who's thinking about being a programmer, sometimes when you take this position, you look at the perks of it, of running the station, putting the talent on that you like, creating cool events, and it seems glamorous. But then you look at those sides, how many times you were up probably with your wife at 3 o'clock in the morning sweating because the next day you have to tell 3 people they're losing work. I mean, it's difficult. There's no blueprint, unfortunately, to tell you here's how to handle these situations. It's just real life. And sometimes while you're acting on behalf of the company and doing what you have to do for the business, because the reality is if it's not making money, you have to do it. You're still a human being. You're still have personal emotions and feelings for these people that have worked hard for you, and it's not everybody's built to handle that.
Nothing can prepare you for it, especially if, you know, there's really no way to separate out the emotion, at least in my opinion, and certainly for me. You know, whether it's people who are doing a good job or maybe people who are struggling in their job, it doesn't matter. It's just, it is no fun. And oftentimes, and you're right, no one prepares you for it, and I would take it a step further. Sometimes, yeah, whether it's your bosses or whatever, they're just like, go do it, and I'm out. And, you know, because they've done it before, and they're in a position where maybe they don't have to do it, and they can kind of delegate that. And, yeah, that's always, you just feel very alone in that. And by the way, that still being said, yeah, I might feel alone and upset, but there's still someone on the other end who's losing their job, and that's even worse.
I remember going through that, and I was told you have to let X amount of people go. You can hold on to two people, but you got to split their salary in half. And I thought, you know, hey, this is going to be great. At least I can keep two people employed. You know, I'm all about keeping a guy working rather than not having him work. I learned one thing from that experience. Never do that again. Always let the guy go. Because no matter what, you go to them and tell them, I'm going to take 50% of your pay, and I want you to work the same. Nobody's going to be productive that way. And so if there's one experience I gained from it, and I'm curious if you've went through any of those similar situations yourself, it's if you have to do it, you're better off cutting ties as hard as it is, because nobody is going to be happy in a building where they feel that they were disrespected.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, morale is such an important aspect of being able to run a radio station and run it successfully. And that's the kind of thing that just, you know, it just eats up. It, not only that person in particular, but, you know, in turn, the people around them, you know, it kind of bleeds into everything. So it's almost a little bit of just tear the Band-Aid off. You know that morale is going to be tough if you let people go, but I do agree. I mean, that's a really, that's just, it becomes a very untenable, oftentimes, situation to kind of, to put someone in that spot. Yeah, it's really unfair.
Well, as challenging as Detroit was, you went through the exact opposite in New York, because you had an opportunity to work for Sirius XM where, again, like ESPN currently where you're working, a lot of resources. Steve Cohen, fabulous individual who you had an opportunity to work with. Take me through what's different besides the obvious of terrestrial radio and satellite radio.
Obviously, when you're not dealing with ratings on a, you know, week-by-week basis now, right, that it affords you the opportunity to think a little bit more long-term, to be more open-minded. You know, I try to be open-minded in general, but you know, sometimes it's hard because you see ratings and there's a lot of pressure in the building around what the ratings look like when you're, you know, you're at a radio station. So at Sirius XM, I really appreciated the fact that there was a little bit more open-mindedness around how you program and the chances maybe you take with certain programs or certain channels. That really felt like an environment that was, it was just so different than what I was used to, and I appreciated it a lot. I mean, Steve Cohen, you know, he's done such a great job there, and I owe him a lot, too. I mean, he was kind enough to create a job for me to bring me to Sirius, and you know, I can't say that about a lot of people, and you know, he was always willing to give you some latitude as far as the talent and the ideas that you had for a channel. You know, I did a couple of channels that were startups, which was great. And so it is very different that day to day. You feel a little bit more available to look at things, you know, more open-minded.
So you talk about Sirius XM and how great it is, but you decided to leave. So you go to the nation's capital. You're going to go work with Rick Carmian and the Red Zebra folks at ESPN 980 in D.C. Unfortunately, you get there, you're starting to make some things come together, and then all of a sudden, a management restructure takes place. So take me through that 6-7 month period, what you gained from that experience.
Yeah, I gained a lot. It was difficult. You know, I went to D.C. because I always had that local sports radio kind of feel in my blood. I mean, coming from the Score, that's something that I always really appreciated. And so I felt like it was kind of time to get back into that. And yeah, going there, I knew that there were a lot of challenges with the radio station. You know, there were some challenges with the newer morning show that they had put on and some other day parts and some really good talent there, but there's definitely some challenges. And yeah, I tried to dig right into it. And then, yeah, you know, when the guy who hires you gets let go and other new people are in charge, you have to adapt, and sometimes that means doing what you can, but also knowing that you probably have to go a different way. So, I just kind of learned that to be as wide-eyed as possible as I move from situation to situation. I think that I had such a great experience at SiriusXM that it kind of put me in a place where I didn't maybe see some of the potential pitfalls that existed in making the move that I did. And I think that one of the things that I really learned is to be a little bit more just mindful of what those look like and more realistic about them. Because, listen, we all want to believe that, we could take this and do it differently and turn it around and et cetera, et cetera. Of course, you kind of go in with that mentality no matter what. But there are some situations that just maybe don't fit your personality as well as you would think or you would hope. And so I think that was a big kind of learning process for me, because when we went our separate ways there and looking for a new opportunity, that was a big thing for me. I'm like, I'm not just going to take an opportunity just to take it. I really want to find the right environment for me personally. And landing here at ESPN LA, it was like, it was perfect. No job is perfect, obviously, but the people, just the environment was the right sort of environment for me. Scott McCarthy, who's the GM here, is just a great guy and really smart, and working with Amanda Brown as the assistant program director, and just incredibly smart and great at what she does. And I'm like, these are people that you want to be around. and these are people who are into the collaborative effort of creating good content, because I think now more than ever, it is collaborative. You got to have a lot of smart people around you. I think that before, maybe you could kind of go it alone and figure it all out. And I think that the nature of this business now, it's so challenging that if you try to do that, you're going to struggle. You got to have great people in positions to be able to influence the content. And it's tough to move across the country, especially with a wife and two young children, but it's been more than worth it.
Yeah, but I'm sure you didn't have to sell Los Angeles being a difficult one.
Yeah. I mean, the difficult thing is it's very far away from our family in Chicago. But yeah, it's LA. It's just lovely here. And although it's raining today, and it's rained a lot, which is good. I mean,
for you.
I know, right?
I'm sitting in New York struggled watching the drought, ice but form on my deck, and you're talking to me about one day of rain in LA.
Yeah, it's 55 and rainy. This is a tough one for us.
I want to ask you one question about LA. LA, because I think this is helpful to anyone who's early on in their career, heck, even veteran programmers. When it comes to coaching high-profile talent, I mean, let's face it, George Sedano, Keyshawn Johnson, Marcellus Wiley, LZ Granderson, Mason in Ireland, these guys are great at what they do, but I'm guessing they've got a few opinions to share, not just on the air. And so when you're coaching talent of that nature and you know that they're good at what they do and they're going to perform for you, how do you decide whether or not to be too hands-on, not hands-on at all? What's your strategy when it comes to how often you meet with them? Is it planned? Is it off the cuff? Just curious of how you go about approaching those various shows and those personalities.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think you've got to read the room. Mason and Ireland are so good at what they do. They've been doing it for so long and so successfully. I'm not going to all of a sudden, come in and start shaking the tree. It'd be foolish. As a matter of fact, I'd learn a lot from them on a daily basis. But there's a little something here and there, for them. It's just being open with them. And I don't have meetings with them. Every once in a while, we'll sit down, we see each other in the hallway, they'll just drop in and have a conversation, it'll be casual, and maybe in those instances, I try to get some feedback for them about what they think is working and not working, and maybe share a little bit on my side. I mean, I think, especially with veteran talent, the key is, if you're going to make a suggestion about the show, you better have some really good reasoning to back it up. You've got to really talk them through it in a way that is valid. You can't just come in there and we're going to do it this way and this is the way it should be done and blah, blah, blah. You know, little instances where I use a lot of the tools that we have ratings-wise to build a story. And if I'm wrong, I'll have an idea and go, maybe I should do this differently, and I'll do some research. And sometimes I'm wrong. Okay, maybe I'm just not right about that. But there's other times where I'm like, okay, the numbers are starting to bear this out. So I'll share some of that and go, this is why I'm thinking this. But also try to leave it open to, you know, what do you think, or why would that maybe not work for you? You just, I am not a, there's no one size fits all. We should do it this way or no way. And it's a different environment now. And so I really try to be open-minded. Now, that being said, some guys love feedback and they come in a lot. I mean, Sedan is a perfect example of that. He loves to talk. You know, he was a programmer. He loves to talk about philosophy. And so we don't meet regularly every day, but like even this morning, we spent 25 minutes together. We went through some ratings. We talked about some ideas, and he's very, very open to it and wants to do that. So, you know, it's not a one size fits all, and I don't approach it that way. I'm a big believer in read the room. What does the person need? What do they not need? Where are they at in their growth process? Kelvin Washington, who is now took over for Max Kellerman in afternoons with Marcellus, he's super talented and really good. We meet once a week. I give him feedback, because obviously the situation is new to him, and I want to support him in that. But when it's all said and done, I heard Belichick talking about it's the players, and he's right. I mean, it's the guys on the air. I try to do what I can to help facilitate their success. Between me, Amanda here doing the same thing. We work together hard to try to do that, but they do it, it's really about their personalities and their love for what they're doing that's going to be the winner in the long run. So from that standpoint, it is about the players. Just got to read the room. And I've been around some guys who like to throw grenades all over the place, and that's just not quite my style.
Well, listen, you've been gracious with your time. I really appreciate it. I'm going to wrap up with hitting you with a few quick hitters.
Okay.
These are six quick questions, just the first thing that pops to mind, okay?
Oh, boy. All right.
The thing that sports radio does best is?
Personality. I mean, it just drives personality. I love that. Fun, foolish, stupid sometimes, silly, but it's a personality-driven thing, and that's what I love about it.
The area where sports radio is weakest is?
I think taking chances and cultivating talent is probably number one for me.
Best way to define the current state of ratings measurement?
That's a good one. That's a good one. I probably should.
Everyone laughs.
I think, I guess I will say shaky.
Okay, fair enough. Talent who aren't accessible and active on social media are?
They're missing a huge opportunity. This is the marketing tool that's only going to enhance who they are and the amount of money they can make in the future and the amount of people who will connect to them. I think a lot of them are missing an opportunity there.
When pursuing a job opening at Dan Zampillo Station, an aspiring host should do what?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think know something about what you're applying for. Know what's going on at the station. Know a little bit about the market. Don't just, here's my stuff, and if there's ever anything open, let me know. I always like the guys who right away I could tell have done a little bit of homework. They can point out stuff that's happened on the station, stuff that we're doing or not doing. They've listened. Immediately that goes, okay, let me pay a little attention to what this person is all about. And I may or may not like what their demo says, but that oftentimes will get my attention.
The final one, to be a great program director, you must?
You have to be willing to evolve. I really believe that. These times, they've changed even from when I first got into it. Like, you've got to be willing to evolve and be willing to think through how you approach people and what how you send that message on a daily basis almost, because now with technology and all things going on, it's different. I mean, I know it sounds so cliched, but if you're not willing to evolve, and I say this to talent too, if you're not willing to evolve, you're going to have a really tough time growing in this business.
He is Dan Zampillo, Operations Manager for ESPN LA 710. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Zampillo. That's Zampillo. It's been great, my man. Good seeing you last week. Appreciate the time and continued success in Los Angeles.
Jason, thank you very much, and same to you.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dan Zampillo. Very interesting guy, and if you've had the benefit of working with him, then I'm sure you'd agree, great guy as well. You know, the one thing I can relate to that he talked about is the challenge of when you're building your career, having to move around. And in Dan's case, he's been in Chicago, Detroit, New York, Washington, D.C., and now Los Angeles. When I started my career, I never thought I'd leave New York. I actually probably cost myself a few opportunities in the first 8 years because I didn't want to move. Now, 12 years after that, I've had stops in Bristol, Connecticut, Philadelphia, St. Louis, and San Francisco. And when I started my pursuit of sports radio in my early 20s, I never thought I'd wind up in any of those places. But the one thing you learn as you go in this business is that if you're willing to cast the net far and wide, you stand a better chance of landing good opportunities than if you just stay put in your own backyard. Now, granted, if you can become the Derek Jeter of your market and stay with the same team for 2 decades, you know, maybe it was the station you grew up listening to and you build a career there, God bless you. For someone like myself and someone like Dan Zampillo, when those situations aren't there, you can still build a very successful career, but you've got to be willing to test yourself, embrace the discomfort of different situations, and go out into the world and find out what you're made of. And that kind of makes radio fun when you think about it. It's not just the challenge of going into an office each day and holding meetings and talking with talent or getting behind a microphone and connecting with an audience that makes it unique. It's the opportunity to go through various life experiences, combine them, and ultimately be able to step back at the end of your career and look at it almost like a book. You go through the various chapters and you find, that was great, this was good, that was average, man, that absolutely sucked. And when you add it all up, hopefully you've got 200 to 300 pages worth of material and a tale that everyone wants to read. That's going to do it for the inaugural edition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Don't forget, if you want to stay up to date on the latest sports media news, go to sportsradiopd.com. You could also follow me on Twitter, at sportsradiopd. Kid Rock once said, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. And that, my friends, is the challenge that awaits each and every one of you who are working at a radio station today and looking to connect with an audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com. We'll be right back.